So anyway, back to the actual show we were gonna do.
We were gonna do a show.
I think that was the actual plan. I was playing the Goat Simulator, thinking to myself, "Yeah, well, I'll do that because no one was around." But hey, people are here now, so
are they?
That's something.
Really?
Are they? They're kind of around, a little bit. How is everyone doing, by the way?
Oh, you know,
doing good.
You're not a goat, so
not a goat.
Not a goat.
Doing better than that goat and all those people you murdered.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's not hard. That's a pretty low bar to actually vault over. What were we actually going to talk about? Did we have a topic? I don't know if we had a topic. We probably didn't have a topic. I think that's why the goat ends up working out so well. I was going to start with an in memoriam. Was what I was actually going to start with. Rest in peace, Anthem. Anthem's gone.
Yeah.
We hardly knew ye and hardly wanted to. And also kind of rest in peace Stadia, because it looks like that's pretty much done. Yeah. So, what was the actual... They say that they're bringing out new games and everything, but it also looks like they're not, that their grand plan for Stadia kind of has fallen apart.
Fizzled before it got started.
They had 100, what was it, they hired, 150 game developers to do Stadia games, and, laid them all off. Yep. Good job, Google.
And here's an article about them winding down.
Yes, thank you.
Not quite dead, so I'm not quite sure what the not quite dead about it is.
That's people wanting to save face, I think, more than anything. It's pretty much like the fact that they've pretty much let go of everybody that was working on stuff for the system is a pretty clear indicator, at least for me. Of course, sources say it never gave the studios a chance. That doesn't really surprise me. but this is just information that had come out this last week, basically. And something that the Wired article mentions about this is that there was a problem that Google is a tech company, not a content company. And I think that's actually a very interesting, astute observation, actually, mm-hmm. Is that it's very different to do that. Like, Microsoft had a learning curve when they said we wanted to get into games and they started the Xbox. They had to move from being like a tech company to being able to do content as well. And then they had to hire a bunch of people to do that job specifically. So that's why, obviously, Google was trying to get a lot of game studios involved to make first-party games. But it doesn't really look like most of any of them are actually going to manifest themselves. And this is, like, Google does have a bit of a track record for coming up with stuff and not necessarily following through with everything. And I think once they had the original stuff come out about, like the input sensitivity, when you saw the video come through about, like, yeah, the delay is always different. Yeah. with the platform, that, yeah, this is not really ready for prime time yet, so... So the Anthem thing, which is not really surprising, but basically they announced that they're really not going to continue maintaining Anthem after they talked about it being the live service. And I feel like there's a whole rant I could get on when it comes to live service models of doing gaming. and that this is the cautionary tale that everybody should remember for the future. When a game studio says that, yeah, it's a live service, so there might not be a lot of content in the game now, but ooh, just you wait. There's going to be a game in here one day. And then they abandon the game. It's like, or maybe not. We're moving on to the next one that will be half finished when we release it. Yeah, you're going to love it.
It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be fantastic. I remember back in my day, I remember when they would release games when all the content was already in it. That was...
What?
Yeah, I know! It's blasphemy. It is crazy talk. Can you imagine days when games actually just used to release when they were done? That is crazy times. Now you
do that with live service games?
No, that's exactly the problem. You can't do that with a live service game that's called a live service because they don't want to do that. The roadmap of content, Alex. It's the roadmap of content. The roadmap to know.
That's the model we need for podcasting.
Yeah, the roadmap of content. Yeah, you sign up early for the podcast, and then every week you get new content dropped into. That is the podcast model.
Yeah, it just works.
Yeah, it just works. I always secretly get a little bit angry, though, when, like, Fallout 76, when people come back and they're like, actually, it's good now because of all the stuff they've added in. It's like, don't give them credit. Don't give them credit 2 years later after they put stuff into the game. Like, oh, well, it's good. No, that just encourages them to do it again. There's no reason they couldn't have just released it with this stuff in it, you know? It might have taken them a little bit longer, but come on, folks. No, if you give them a pass, it was like No Man's Sky. It's like, yeah, I understand that they gave you extra content and went back to the drawing board and Hello Games tried hard to put stuff into the game. But if you give them credit for it now and you absolve them of everything, then all they're going to take away from it is, it's fine if we do it again and release a half-finished game. Don't do that. I played some of No Man's Sky, and after they had done the next expansion, because they actually had content, and it still felt kind of empty to me, honestly. So, and I played Fallout 76 after the Wastelanders came out, to see if it was any better, and yeah, it's an improvement, don't get me wrong, like, there's stuff to do, like, that's good. But still, it's not, I just sit there and think to myself, Fallout 76, they could make so many more updates. They had the Steel Dawn or whatever expansion that they just did. I keep thinking to myself, well, yeah, like 4 or 5 more major expansions like that, and you'll have the content that you had in Fallout 4. It's just like, but people could just buy Fallout 4. Or New Vegas, or 3, and they'll have a much more satisfying experience than whatever you're trying to make 76 in the next year or two. There's not enough there. And then you have cases like Anthem, where eventually Bioware just kind of goes, yeah, we're out of ideas. So, have fun, everybody. Hope you buy our next game. Like, well, yeah, maybe I don't want to. I don't know. It will probably be a Mass Effect or a Dragon Age, and I will want to buy those. But they had talked about the idea that when they did the next Dragon Age, that it might end up being like a live service game, like Anthem.
But no, I think I just read an article on that. All those plans were dumped.
Yeah, they were.
To make a live service game.
What happened is EA saw that, well, probably the first thing happened was that Anthem didn't really do well at all. But then the next thing that happened was that little game that came out from Respawn under EA, Jedi Fallen Order, came out, and it was an experience, like everyone kept saying they wanted, and it sold well, and they made money on it, without any of the loot boxes or microtransactions or anything like that. And then all of a sudden they were going, oh, hey, the thing that people said they wanted, they'll buy. Oh, okay. Maybe we'll just do that now. No kidding. No kidding. Good job, EA. You learned a lesson. So then, yeah, they scrapped those plans, and they're I guess, going to be making a Dragon Age like the other Dragon Age games that people probably would have assumed that it was going to be like in the first place. So that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. If it's anything like Inquisition, I'll be happy. Because I did like Inquisition. I'm not sure how many people played that. But it was good. It was
I played through all the main Dragon Age games.
Okay, okay. Now, I was always curious about this, and since you've played through all of them, probably similar to me, which of the three did you like the most?
I really liked the very first one, Origins, right?
Origins, yep.
Because what I like about a game like Origins is that you can start, you know, you chose your race and you had a different starting point. Like, there was different lore. Yeah. And if you went through the game, it started again, it actually added to the story by playing that other race.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really enjoy that. That's kind of how you get me to replay your game, is that you provide a different experience towards that beginning, and then maybe I'll at least play through that different experience part.
Sure. Yeah. I actually have the Ultimate Edition on one of my services, so I was going to try doing that and see what it's like. So, yeah, looking forward to that. There, I think there were 6 different opening starts to that one, if I remember correctly. I don't quite remember how many openings there were. I think there's 6 different options you have at the beginning.
I don't remember. I played a bit of Dragon Age, but it was, I think the pacing of it wasn't something I enjoyed as much.
Oh, on the, was this the first one?
Either one.
It was
might have been the first one? I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I know that the first one might start slowly depending on what you're doing.
Well, no, I'd gotten a fair amount through. It just meant, like, the pacing of, like, combat. I'm not the biggest fan of tactical RPGs.
I gotcha. Yeah, and it definitely is that. It is definitely a tactical RPG. Playing the Grey Warden?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, then that was the first one.
Alistair and Morrigan.
Yeah, you were playing Origins. Although Morrigan comes back in other installments, too. But Alistair... Yeah, Morrigan, yeah. Claudia Black was not letting that role go.
Of course not.
I'm coming back as many times as I can. And no one cared. No one bothered. No one had a problem with that. Claudia Black can come back as many times as she wants. I'll take her in every single game. You can be in the Uncharted series. You can be in the Dragon Age series. I am not going to have a problem with it. But yeah, Morrigan came back several times. Alistair, though, I think was only in Origins, if I remember.
I assume he died.
Made an appearance in one of the other ones.
Oh, he did?
I believe.
Oh, I can't remember.
Or at least he was mentioned. If your data carried over, depending on what you did in the first one.
Okay.
I think he gets a mention in a couple spots.
Yeah, there were a couple characters I remember that were in Origins that had some ancillary place in like 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Inquisition, a couple of them are involved. But what I found real interesting, though, about that series is that each one of those installments actually is structured differently. In the Origins, you're moving from these kind of small areas where you're doing different quests, and then some of them lock and some of them open up as you're going through, and the dark spawn or you know, coming down those paths. So you're kind of going on that one quest, and then in the second one, it's about chapters, and it changes the landscape as you go from chapter one to chapter two to chapter... And then in Inquisition, they're like, nope, these are basically giant open world areas that you're going to be able to come back to over and over again. So they actually structured the game differently in each one. I thought that was interesting. And definitely gives you an idea of which kind of experience you like to have. It's, I mean, they did kind of the same thing with Mass Effect. Not so much from the first three, because the first three had a pretty similar structure. But then when they did Andromeda, they also made it like a bigger open world area kind of game. That one didn't work as well. that didn't work quite as well as Inquisition did, but... I thought Andromeda was fine, but I understand what people's problem was with it. It also wasn't really a finished game.
Yeah, but finishing games, who does that?
Yeah, there are very obvious plot lines in Andromeda that they do not finish. That you can tell they had every intention of finishing at some point. Like, oh God, I can't remember the race that Tali is from, but Quarians. The story behind Andromeda, because I'm sure most people haven't played it, is after Arcs basically take everybody to this new quadrant in space, and so each one of the Arcs is from one of the major races that were part of the Council. So you kind of know what happens to the Asari one, and you kind of know what happens to the human one, because you're on it. Was it the Krogan? You learn about the other ones, but then you never really find out what happens to the Quarian Arc, although there's talk that it's just lost out there in space. But they never really explore that. It never gets talked about. There's never anything that happened with it past that. Like, they realized, we're not going to add any additional content in here. So we're just not going to talk about any of the other arcs that were just lost out in space. We're not going to address it. They get to this whole new quadrant of space, and there's all of two new alien races.
Oh boy.
Everything else. The one that you were in, there were like 10 different major sentient alien races. The new one, there's two new races that are just out there, and they're fighting each other. That's it. This is a very barren area of space, apparently.
And they're not just like, who are all these aliens coming in?
Yeah, and all, yeah, then the two of them come, there's been like these two alien races that have been in conflict for like a really long time, and then all of these giant arcs from different alien species come in, and they're like, oh, hey, let me just show you to our ambassador, and we'll chat for a while. And it's like, are you sure? I don't know about that. But yeah, no, your first contact with them is pretty much like, oh, hey, how's it going? <It's> like, you're new.
Got a Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, well, yeah, I'm just going to give you free reign throughout the city. Yeah, what do you want to see? You want to see some of the cool stuff we got? Yeah, okay, cool. I'll show you around. It's cool. Everything's fine. And we can speak your language. Don't worry. Nah, we got this translator thing. We knew that you were coming. It's like a thing. We figured it out. Don't worry. Yeah, you and all your other friends, and you're all cool? Okay, great. That's good to know. Of course, you, as the landing party for Ryder, you have different crew members that are all part of different races with you. So you all land at one time, and apparently they're just like, they're fine with it. The only other sentient species that they are familiar with is the one that has been trying to destroy them for like hundreds of years. And then they meet a whole bunch of new species, and their first thought is, friendlies, we'll just let you on in. Come on down. And everybody's just cool with it. And then you go and you make the bad aliens pay for being bad aliens. And
which ones are the bad aliens?
The ones that attack you.
Oh, I mean, you did invade their sector of space.
Yeah, but you know.
Nope.
That's fine. You know, it's what happens. They had their reasons. I think the reason why they're the bad guys is because they were written that way. And and they also have, like, the worst comeback lines. They really do.
Are they Duke Nukem Forever?
Yeah. No, a Duke Nukem Forever is... They wish they were at that level. It's, poor Duke Nukem. Duke Nukem was good once... I think I remember it being okay at one point. Maybe I'm misremembering that.
Probably.
Or maybe it's just that Forever was as much Duke Nukem as people had forgotten they didn't want.
probably also that.
Yeah. We really want another Duke Nukem game, and then they gave you another Duke Nukem game, and you were like, "Oh, this is Duke Nukem, right? This isn't aged well at all." But anyway, so the fun thing is that BioWare is going to be making another Mass Effect game, probably, and it's going to be interesting to see if they're actually going to just keep doing the Andromeda thing, or if they're going to say, "Nope, screw that, we're doing a different thing altogether."
Well, given the reception of Andromeda, I would assume it's going to be just something else.
Yeah, but it's also under EA, so I'm thinking Andromeda 2, and it's a live service with some loot boxes. But they've learned their lesson, apparently, that single-player games make money because people like them.
I mean, yeah.
But they had to apparently be reminded... They had to be reminded of it, which is scary. In other news that exists, I swear, I may have backed a Kickstarter.
Crazy.
For a game called Coral Island.
I feel like I saw that.
You had probably seen it promoted at some point. I know you don't care about it, so don't worry about it.
So what is Coral Island?
Oh, I'm gonna pull some stuff up for you so that you can see Coral Island. So Coral Island is basically a new... I'll just tuck this Kickstarter in here so that you can... You can see that it's apparently not going to auto come up. But anyway, Coral Island is from Stairway Games. It was very well received. I think that their pledge goal was something like $75,000 in order to do it. And they raised $1.6 million.
Okay.
Of the 70,000 goal. And what they basically did is they said, okay, you know how people like the Stardew Valley and the Harvest Moon? We're going to do that, but we're going to set it on an island, and we're going to give it, like, more, like, modern graphics, and we're going to have a whole bunch of different things that you can actually mine, and we're going to kind of let you actually build the island out and meet a whole lot more inhabitants, and you're going to be able to go diving down into the ocean, and you'll meet mermaids and people and everything down there, and discover the island secrets and stuff like that. And I was like, yes, please. I will take that. It was the reimagining the farm sim game is basically what they're trying to do. And they unlocked basically every single stretch goal, so it's also... So, yeah, the Merfolk Underwater Village was one of those stretch goals. We're getting that. Kids grow up in this one. So you can actually have kids, and they will grow up. It will have mod support.
So we can expect this game in 3 to 5 years.
Actually, not that long. At least in terms of their estimated time. I got the alpha pack, the alpha thing, and that is actually supposed to, the alpha keys are supposed to release in June.
Nice.
So there's that. There's also going to be, since they got the 600,000 stretch goal, there will also be multiplayer support.
Oh, that's going to be the hard one to implement for most games.
Yeah, it's probably going to be one that they have to take the longest amount of time for, because I think for regular, when they're able to actually release this on like Steam and those platforms, it will be 2022. I think they have said that that's their goal for that particular. Yeah,
I tend to not want to back most video game Kickstarters, because I'd rather not have to wait for something for 3 years.
Right, right. One of the big things was that as a backer, I will actually get I will actually get the game before it would be publicly released on Steam.
Yeah, just like Star Citizen.
Well, I hold out a little bit more hope for this than Star Citizen.
16 romanceable characters.
Yes. A whole merfolk kingdom. There's island hopping, so that you're going to be able to go to different biomes. So you have a whole bunch of coops and such. Barn animals. So yeah. Yeah, you get to fight in the mines and everything. And all the stuff that you kind of knew about Stardew Valley and loved. Well, at least me. I loved it. And that's all going to be part of the experience. But yeah, you get to customize your characters and everything, and you get to go fishing. There's a lot of fish that you get to, all the stuff that you really want from the farming life sims stuff. That's all there. Big island, there's different there's going to be a beach, there's a town, there's the lake, the forest, the lookout, the woodland, the hillside. All sorts of fun stuff. And yeah, there's mer people and the pufferfish, and of course there's, just like Joja Corporation in the in Stardew Valley, they have the Pufferfish Drilling Corporation, who's trying to drill oil on and around Coral Island, and they want to lobby their way into the community. So obviously you're going to have to figure out a way to deal with them. And you know, there's some bog standard stuff here, but yeah, no, I got the Alpha Farmer pack, and so once I get a hold of it, I'll be able to tell you if it's any good. But, and I am going to make the prediction that it will come sooner than Star Citizen, Alex.
Well, I mean, how long has Star Citizen been in production?
Well, Star Citizen, technically, if you were to ask them, I think that there are parts of Star Citizen that are available to people that backed it, but not really the full game.
Yep.
At any time. So from their perspective, they're probably thinking that they're doing a good job, but they also have gotten a tremendous amount of money and have gone through multiple Kickstarters and fundraising campaigns.
Yeah.
In order to do that. And if I... now I'm trying to think how much they've actually raised. It's an ungodly amount of money right now.
Multiple millions.
Their budget is $300 million. So,
I can do a lot with $300 million.
You could literally make a legitimate, instead of whatever they're doing.
I backed Star Citizen on their original Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I've only played it a couple of times since then.
Okay.
And it was fun. And one of the first experiences we got to do when we actually got to see other people is I was flying around with my friend. And we're practicing landing our starships, because that was a thing you could do.
Sure.
And we landed on this asteroid. And my friend got out of his ship and started to look around. And then suddenly his ship wasn't parked right, and it tipped and it fell on his character's head.
Oh. Oh, no.
That was great.
Oh, great. So since you've actually backed it, you can probably tell me a little bit more. But have they been able to release anything cohesive as like the full game? Do they give you any indication that there will eventually be a full game for you to play?
I haven't played it since they've let you leave the star dock with your spaceship and try to land ships.
Oh.
So that's been 3 years, 4 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, the ship design is really cool. I like that. But.
Oh, I love the concept. It sounds like, you know, if you did No Man's Sky, but much more richly detailed with, like,
that's,
really, you know.
That's why I play Elite Dangerous sometimes.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that.
Currently playing Elite
Dangerous. Yeah. And the spiritual and a spiritual successor to Freelancer like this. And Freelancer, I actually have not gotten a chance to play. I should really see if that's on Steam sale. I'd like to play Freelancer, actually. But and Freelancer actually kind of, if I remember correctly, a bit of a spiritual successor to Escape Velocity, and that's a great game. Always loved Escape Velocity. But I am kind of surprised, though, because they do have a tendency when these Kickstarters start to become so large in their budget and what they can do with it, it seems to be almost a detriment, because then they try to use all of that to make it bigger and bigger, but then it never comes out. You never see it. They had the same problem with Mighty No. 9. It's like, yeah, people really want to have, like, the new Mega Man experience. But then they get so much money, and they're like, well, now we got to make it even bigger and better than what it was going to be. And then by the time it comes out, they've kind of ruined the whole actual experience of what it was supposed to be in the first place. And everyone goes, this is not good.
Well, that's why you don't have stretch goals that would change it completely.
Right, right. And I think in that case, though, they had gone way past what any of their known stretch goals were going to be, and then they felt obligated to figure out new stuff past that. But by seeing they wanted and release it in a timely fashion with everything that the stretch goals would have, and I'm pretty sure people would have been perfectly fine with that, you know? They would have been happy with that, and they would have gotten it in a timely fashion, and it would be far more focused. Star Citizen on the other $300 million. I'm sure they feel very obligated to try and make this the greatest game of all time that has ever existed in the universe. But I think more or less people would just like to be able to play it at some point. that would be good.
In my mind, you use that money to make the core game, do everything you need to get the game out in a good state, and then use the extra money for DLC. No, not even DLC, but, like, you know, free updates.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what they're going to be doing with a lot of the big releases now. 7, they're mostly doing it so that they can make up for the But so many of the games that I've seen now, even the ones that are pretty much complete, they're just straight up saying, yes, we are going to have a major content expansion. It is going to indeed be free. It is coming out on this time and date. I hope you like it. And that's great. I'm super happy when they can do that, as long as it's not a stand-in for the actual game. And not releasing the game in a finished state.
Immortals Phoenix Rising is doing something kind of different with their planned DLC, which is they're making different style of game and calling it DLC. Like, it's just an add-on to the main game. And the main character of that's Phoenix and Immortals Phoenix Rising isn't your main character, and there's going to be two different styles of game taking place in different pantheons of gods.
Oh, cool.
And so that's sort of one way where they might be doing something unique and right with that kind of thing. You know, they had a great solid base game, and now they're trying different things with expansions instead of going, oh no, we need to add on to our base experience to make it a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that I appreciate is when the DLC is not trying to supplement just the game to make the game complete, but is actually providing a unique experience outside of the game, just expanding upon that. Some of the ones that I've seen, like I've been playing New Vegas recently. One of the best expansions that they had for... Well, actually, all of the expansions are really good because they are, like, singular insular experiences compared to the base game. You go to different areas with different landscapes and different storylines that are all kind of individual sections. You can understand why they're add-ons. they wouldn't have made sense in the main game. They have to be their own thing. And the best among those was, like, Old World Blues, which would make no sense if it were part of the main game. But totally makes sense as an additional experience that you have outside of it. Those are things that I totally understand. Borderlands does that a lot, like when Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon Keep. Great expansion that takes a whole other turn from the basic Borderlands 2 experience. Adds in a whole bunch of different kinds of mechanics and landscape and concept. And does that, and those are the kind of add-ons I'm fine with, because it doesn't sacrifice. You want this kind of singular experience over here that's part of the game. You can have that, and you pay for the add-on for that. That's okay. Broken Steel, on the other hand, for 3, that basically fixed all the problems with the ending of the game. I'm glad they did it, but I also don't really appreciate that they had to come back and sell me an add-on to fix the end of the game. So yeah, there's an upside and a downside. I hadn't really heard about the Immortals thing, but I like that idea that they're taking the opportunity to do that. It kind of reminds me a little bit of what they had done with, like, what would it have been? Assassin's Creed Freedom's Cry, which was like a standalone expansion pack to Black Flag. You played Adewale instead in that one. Or the other one that did something similar was Blood Dragon, which was like a whole other separate experience from Far Cry 3. It was like a sub-game all to itself. They do like to do that a lot. So it doesn't surprise me that they wanted to do it with Immortals. I still have to play that game. I still have to play that one. That, and now that it's on Steam, I wanted to play the one with the metal dragons. I can't remember what it is. The metal dinosaurs.
Ark?
No, not Ark. No, I tried Ark. I did not. No, Horizon Zero Dawn. That's what I was thinking of.
Oh, I started playing that.
Yeah. I had heard really good things about it.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I stopped my playthrough on it to play some other things, but I think I'll get back to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that looked interesting to me, at least. It's definitely a me kind of game, but... Right now, I'm a little too invested in Yakuza, so I gotta get through those. Yeah. Ever play Yakuza, Alex?
No, I haven't.
That series? No. Okay. DC, you ever play the Yakuza games?
I've watched other people play Yakuza games. I haven't played one yet. They look like a lot of fun, and I just...
They're wacky.
I may start with this latest one, and...
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean Zero? The one that they came out with? That's actually a prequel?
Yeah.
Or, oh, no, you're thinking of the Like a Dragon that just came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually a very different structure. They made that like an RPG, more than the kind of brawler that the other games kind of are. But see, the thing about it is that what you get used to in Yakuza is that you just have to accept the tonal shifts in the game, because the basic game of Yakuza is a literal crime drama that it takes itself relatively seriously in terms of everything that's happening. It's like a straight up crime drama. And then in the middle of that, you have all the sub stories that are ridiculous, and you might find yourself racing like little slot car racers, or doing karaoke, or or doing a myriad of other activities that are just completely out of left field. And somebody is, you know, has just bubbles all over them and can't get clean and needs you to help them. There's just wacky stuff that just suddenly happens in the game, and you're always getting sidetracked with it. I'm running to try and, you know, save the Tojo clan from annihilation over here, and then all of a sudden somebody just, like, walks up and it's like, oh no, I need help selling matches. And now I'm on a match-selling quest. Or Mad Dog Majima just pops in with his awesome snakeskin suit and the eye patch and says he wants to fight me now. And I'm like, okay, cool. It's a crazy series, but it's always a great series. It's a super fun one. So I did Kiwami, and I'm playing Kiwami 2. And then the remasters just came out for 3, 4, and 5, and I cannot remember which ones I played. I think it was 3 and 4, but I don't. And then there was a whole other one called Dead Souls, where literally just it's like a whole side thing where the whole city just gets taken over by zombies.
Perfect.
Now it's a zombie Yakuza. And that's just what you're dealing with now. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I think in the new one too, there are like super summons because it's an RPG, so it takes a lot of cues from Japanese RPGs. And like I think there's a crab with a knife that's one of your super summons if you do their quest. It just, and that sounds like, yeah, that sounds pretty accurate to Yakuza. The one that I want to try doing is I never played Yakuza 0, which is one that they came out later that it goes back and sets it in the 80s. So it's like a neon-infused 80s version of the game. And I'm like, oh yes, please. I will do that. Cannot wait. It's super fun, but the real pleasure of Yakuza is not even just the main story where you're going around and randomly brawling with people and trying to do the crime story, but like all the other stuff that you get to do in the meantime. There are full on, if you know how to play Mahjong, any of those games, you know how to do the bowling or batting cages or anything like that, they have full on versions of all of that that you can also play in tournaments and stuff like that in the game. There's just like a million different things. There's a whole dart game that I was playing into that was pretty great. Oh, and then the craziest thing I have ever seen is they have the Sega Arcade. So you go into the Sega Arcade, there are the little claw machines where you can just try to pick up all the plushies that are in the claw machines. But this guy came up to me, and this happened in Kiwami 2, in case anyone's wondering, and says, "Sir, would you like to try out this amazing new technology that we have? It's called Toylets." Okay, what are Toylets? Well, we realized that when people go to use the restroom, they're not finding it nearly as much fun as it could be. So we've come up with a way to make a game out of going to the urinal. And you're sitting there kind of thinking to yourself, oh God, no, there is not a urinal mini game in this, is there? And yeah. Yeah, there is. So after you have enough to eat and drink, if you want, you can go and play the Toylets game. and they have a couple little mini games where you try to control flow so that you can so that you win the mini game. And the greatest thing is because Kazuma Kiryu is always the same level of intensity for everything he does. He has a super serious, like, ready for battle face on the second you go into the mini game, and it is terrific. It is absolute, like he is so intense that yes, he is going to win at toilets for this sub game that you get to play for no, that just comes out of left field. That is the majority experience that you have playing Yakuza. It is just a weird, wild experience altogether. Terrific stuff. And there's so many games in the franchise. There's like 9 games altogether in the franchise. So anyway, yeah, I'm mostly doing that right now, trying to work my way through that. But anyway, and I know Alex is doing the Elite Dangerous at the moment. Which I never could quite get into myself.
Why not?
Too difficult to control my ship.
No. I mean, if you're using the keyboard, then yes.
Oh, you have a game... You have a gamepad?
Yeah, I use a... Xbox controller.
Well, yeah, I was actually playing on an Xbox, but I was still. It's the same problem that I have with a lot of like flight sims. It's just too many controls. I couldn't figure out how to put my landing gear down.
Oh, that's L on my keyboard.
Ah.
I use keyboard and controller because there's just a lot of different things.
Right. It's non-existent on mine because I gave up. So, yeah.
I like it. It's fun. Game's big. It's got plenty to do. I did a community event or community goal this last week and made 28 million credits.
Nice.
I got a new paint job for a ship that you can't actually purchase. So it's like just from the event. Shame that I don't have that ship or use that ship, but it's still a nice paint job. And then when the Odyssey comes out in spring, end of spring this year, that's introducing the FPS portion.
Oh, yeah, where you actually get out of your ship.
You actually get to get out of your ship and do different stuff on foot. And allegedly, you're going to be able to... not just get on foot, but you could, like, if you don't want to fly your spaceship somewhere, you can catch a ship and fly there on their ship.
Oh, okay. They're trying to out No Man's Sky, No Man's Sky.
I mean, I feel like this is still more, a lot more in depth than No Man's Sky.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure it is. The flight controls in No Man's Sky are very much arcade based.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is that. I think it's funny is that as they expand, they're kind of adding in features that games kind of like No Man's Sky had, but they're going to try to implement them in a different way.
Which game is?
Elite Dangerous.
I think it was always on the roadmap.
The roadmap content? Yeah.
It was planetary landings.
Okay.
So, like, instead of just flying around in space, you can land and drive on the planet. All of the planets, but, like, a lot of planets.
Sure.
You can't land on Earth-likes still, or water worlds.
Right.
But rocky planets, yeah. Ice planets, yeah. Just not gas giants.
Okay.
And not water or Earth-like. I think the issue with the water in Earth-like worlds is just a matter of physics.
Sure.
And generation, where it's a procedural system.
Okay.
I feel like an Earth-like would be rough. Because of all the vegetation.
Sure.
I know. But yeah, so the first expansion was planetary landings and driving on the planets and the engineers.
Okay.
And when Odyssey comes out, it's like the one that's on foot and let you doing missions not in your spaceship and stuff.
Cool. Okay.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. That sounds fun.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the giant open worlds that just let me be a pirate. Actually, they have several of those, so.
You're waiting for a good one?
I'm waiting for a good one, yeah.
Gotcha.
At some point, I do have to play Legend of Pirates Online just because that was actually a lot of fun. That was a really fun one. When it was just Pirates of the Caribbean Online, but then they made an open source version of it later that was community driven, and that didn't have a subscription model. It was just free to play, and so I do want to get into that and check it out again. It is surprisingly fun for what it is. Yeah, I don't know if you ever saw it. It was actually a browser based game. When it originally came out, it was supposed to be like an MMO, but you kind of played it in browser for the most part, and it was a really neat idea. It was supposed to be based off of, you know, basically Pirates of the Caribbean, because it was a Disney interactive game, and it was fun. They asked you to do timed button presses, and you got new skills and got infamy, and that's how you leveled up, and then you could get nice ships and do ship-based combat as well and go to a bunch of different islands and, you know, have a little bit of fun, storm the castles, stuff like that, be a pirate, but it was kind of cartoonish and colorful, unlike the other cartoonish colorful ones that didn't necessarily work as well. I'm looking at you, Atlas. People didn't like you. you didn't do good. No Man's Sea. What was that? Sea of Thieves. That's right. Big
Sky of Thieves.
No. Sea of Thieves is also colloquially known as No Man's Sea.
Okay.
Because in very similar fashion to that particular game, Rare didn't really populate their world with anything to do when it first came out. Your general goal in that was to locate a treasure map so you could unbury a treasure, and there were about three different kinds of enemies in the entire game. You basically had to battle the sharks when you were underwater, and then you battled the skeletons when you were on land. And that was it. So, they've done a lot of work on that, too. So now there's, like, a Megalodon event, and there's the ghost ships, and the Kraken, a whole bunch of other things that you can do now. But still, I do like pirate games when they come out. I do try a lot of them, but that is with the little asterisk next to it that there aren't all that many that do a good job of it. It's just not common. Black Flag was probably one of the best, and it just happened to be an Assassin's Creed game. And I like The Legend of Black Cat. It was pretty great. And I had an okay time with Pirates of the Caribbean. The one that came out that was like its own... that was actually from Bethesda.
Oops.
That was a while ago. It was from... it was a Russian development house. And it was... That's a fascinating story, too, because I think that originally it was going to be Sea Dogs 2... You know, they were making a pirate game, you know? And then Bethesda had a license to do a Pirates of the Caribbean game, and they said to the dev house, hey, could we just slap Pirates of the Caribbean on this and rename it, and it will still just be the pirate game you made, and we'll put in a few references to the movie? so that it could be a tie-in game. And they were like, okay, I guess we could do that. So they put like Elizabeth Swann doing like a narration at the beginning, and then you fight the Black Pearl at the end, and those are like the only things that are even remotely about Pirates of the Caribbean in the entire game. And the rest of the game is just a pirate game that they were going to make anyway. But it was okay. I guess the story that I was looking into after that, though, is that they eventually broke away from Bethesda anyway. They again, they're like, no, we're just going to go back to making pirate games, but if we can't use that, we'll just do something completely different. They apparently were not actually very happy with the amount of control that Bethesda as a publisher had. And I could totally understand that. Imagine if you were working on a game and it was a sequel to a game you had already come out with, and then all of a sudden the publisher goes, but really, we got a product tie-in, so if we could change the name of your game and also do some other stuff inside the game and change that around, that would be great. We'd really like to do that. Yeah, that would put a damper on my day, too. I'm building a pirate game. Yeah, well, they're building a pirate movie. So, chop chop. I don't remember the name of that game that dev has. I'll have to look it up in a minute. But they did it. Okay job. They once tried to do an MMO of a pirate series, too. I think it was called Crimson Sails?
Crimson Seas.
Pirates of the Crimson Seas. Yeah, did not play that one. I heard it was okay. Pirate games are hard, man.
Yeah.
They have a lot of trouble with and then Risen. I think I played Risen 2 or 3, and those are kind of piratey themed. Again, they were okay. It's very rare that you see to find legitimately good pirate games. I don't know why it's hard to do. You would think that it would actually be relatively easy by comparison to all the space games that they're making. It's just it's space, but it's on flat land and you can have a sea underneath you. It's fun. Too hard. Can't do it. I'd like to see what happens if a company like maybe a BioWare or a Rockstar tried to do it. I think that would be interesting to see. But they're too busy making whatever EA has come up with for them. Which is too bad. But anyway, upshot of that long rant, somebody's got to make me a better pirate game. I need that. If you have any suggestions of great pirate games I can play, I need to know about them. And noting that the ones I've already talked about are probably most of the pirate games that are out there. But I have to find pirate games. Anyway, don't mind me. I'm going to look up pirate games. Oh, Sid Meier's Pirates! That was also okay. Oh, yeah, and Skull and Bones is supposed to come out at some point. So, yeah. Ubisoft is supposed to be making a pirate game. About ships. It might not come out for a while. Or ever, actually, at this point. I'm kind of thinking it won't. Black Wake. Okay, I'll have to look this up and see if this is any good. This came out in, like, 3 years ago, so... Oh, it's cheap. Okay, I'm gonna look and see if this is any good, because if it is, it's very cheap. Yeah, I don't think there's a lot to... Oh, it's about the ship battles. That's cool. Yeah, I'm not against the actual ship battle part, that's fine, but... I do eventually want to get on land and do stuff. Just looking at the Steam recommendations for this, Thumbs up. Pretty alright. There's a review. This is okay. It is fine.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Literally, recommended. Fun enough, just a bit clunky, and well, dead.
Nothing really wrong with it.
Yeah, this some of these reviews are terrific. This one is, this is a recommend, by the way. Got stabbed to death while drinking tea. Truly a unique experience. So I don't know. I don't know what to take away from this. I guess it was fine. I mean, it's literally on sale right now for $1. So I guess if it interests anybody, you could try it out. See if you like it. I don't know. It's one of the first things that pops up when I just look up pirate games. It's just Lego Pirates of the Caribbean, that's in here. So Monkey Island, those games are great. Skies of Arcadia, I guess kind of a pirate game. That's excellent, by the way. Skies of Arcadia, terrific game. Highly recommend. It's like a JRPG, but you're in a sky boat, and mm-hmm. you're going to a bunch of islands in the sky. So it's like a pirate adventure, but instead of in the sea, you're in the sky on these floating planets these floating islands that you get to go to. Uh-huh. And your character is like a cyber pirate character with like the ocular glass, like a steampunk pirate kind of game. It was a lot of fun. The reason why most people probably haven't played it is because its original release was on what was it called?
Yeah.
But it got released later for other consoles, so you are now able to play it. It went on to the GameCube. That's where I played it. It was on GameCube. Really good game. I like that a lot. Other things. I don't want to play that one. No, I don't want to play that one. Ratchet & Clank Future, Quest for Booty. That was a short little game, but it's Ratchet and Clank, so it's worth it. The Legend of Black Cat, yeah, that was fun. Risen is all right. Pirates of the Burning Sea, not the Crimson Sea. Pirates of the Burning Sea. That was the one that came out. I don't think that's still available. That was a subscription service. Is it still out there? Probably not. I will have to look that up. I think it was a subscription service. It was an MMO, a MMORPG. Everyone said they hated, so I don't want to do that one. Shantae and the Pirate's Curse. Oh, actually, that was fun. I'll give them that. You can still download Pirates of the Burning Sea after all this time. So there you go. But I bet you still have to pay a monthly fee. Yeah, okay. Just as of last year, they were still updating it. It is now, holy crap, Pirates of the Burning Sea is 12 years old. That is, you can register, I'm sure you have to pay for this, though. They did not make a free-to-play game for this. Open sales. It does look very dated now that I'm looking at it now. Because it's only been since 2007 that it was copywritten? Only that long. You can battle on the high seas and everything? Ooh. Anyway, I might get that later. More fun stuff. Okay. So anyway, what everyone can take away from this episode is we need more pirate games. That's really what this episode was about. It was about pirate games. If you have a tabletop role-playing game and you talk like a pirate, your character is instantaneously a pirate and gets swashbuckling skills. That's like a rule now. So.
I see.
Yeah. I'm going to make that a new law. I can make laws like that, I think. Is your internet glitching out? I think mine might also be having that problem. It seems to be.
You're sounding fine and haven't dropped once yet on my end.
Oh, good. Good. I think that I might have dropped a little bit on the Twitch stream once or twice. Because I hate that. I hate it when that happens. But anyway. So, pirate games. I don't know why I got onto pirate games. I think it's mostly I just wanted a cutlass. But out of curiosity, DC, out of the kind of genre pieces, do you think that there are any that are kind of underserved by games?
Genres that are underserved by video games or any?
I suppose that I could really just say just thematically for gaming in general. Because as I started to think about pirates, I was also like, yeah, in tabletop, there's not, like, a lot of piratey kind of games either. Like, not that I'm aware of.
I suppose in video games, I'd like to see some more games where you're in a mech and just flying around in a giant robot.
Oh.
Like, I've played ones that are fun, but there's very complicated, or they're expensive arcade machines, or you pay like $20 for 3 hours or something.
Oh, yeah.
And there's lock controls and everything. I just want to go in a giant robot, shoot for things for a while, have some story to it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to remember what it was. Yeah, no, my mind is refreshing. You probably then are familiar with a game that came out a while back called Steel Battalion. From 2002, I'm looking it up right now. This was one that people really did dig. I think it came out on the Xbox, and only I guess the Xbox. But it was such a complex one because they wanted to really make you feel like it was a mech that it had to come with its own controller rig.
Yeah, and pedals and everything.
It had pedals, it had twin joysticks, and, like, the gamepad in the middle and everything. And so it cost, like, $100-something at the time to play the whole thing, because you had to get the controller, but...
I would just want, an action RPG where I get to sit in a mech and go around and fire things, and you give me a great story with it.
Mm.
That's pretty much what I want out of a... of such a game, and I really I can't recall really seeing that anywhere without either being you're in a mech and here's all these complicated controls and you need, you know, your left hand and your right cheek and your frontal lobe to control the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know, just map it to the buttons on a PS4 controller or Xbox controller and give me a story with it, and yeah, let me be in a mech and don't just make it a fighting game, but make it involved. You know, maybe I'm the pilot for a little bit and I get out and I have some humanizing story with the pilot, and then I get in the mech, do some other things.
Right. Yeah. The mech game that I played most recently, I think, well, I did play a little bit of, I think BattleTech, I think I played a bit of, which was okay. It's more of a tactical game. But then the other one that I liked a lot was Titanfall. It is really more of a shooter than anything else, but it did like its storyline a lot, and it had that whole thing where I get in and out of the mech. And it had a really good multiplayer, actually, surprisingly enough. But It does make me think that they're... What other mech games would I... Not Hawken. Sorry. What? What did I say? No, I didn't say nothing. Brigador, I think I actually did play that a bit. And that's okay. That's more of a tactical... Again, that's more of a tactical... version, a little more like XCOM. Is there anything that pops up that I would be able to testify to that would be in sort of that realm? Silent Line. There's some there's so many of these that I have never seen before. Oh, there was another Steel Battalion for the for like the 360. Oh, Gato Roboto, they consider a mech game? Okay. Sure. I gotta play that, actually. That was, that just looked cute, actually, Gato Roboto. It's part of my Game Pass, so I can play this.
Yeah.
But,
oh, hey, it's 2D Metroidvania game.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's 2D, like, side-scrolling Metroidvania game, but it's, I think the idea is that you are a cat in a mech suit. Yes. Yeah, it follows a cat named Kiki attempting to save her own alien planet, which forces Kiki to don a mech suit and explore the planet's depths. So there you go. That's something to consider. I gotta respect that. I mean... Pretty great. Yeah, I can't... Oh God, what other things have, like, mechs involved in them?
So, admittedly, I just want, like, a Dragon Age or Mass Effect, except in a mech suit.
Except in a mech suit.
That'd make me happy.
Yeah.
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 If you're not delivering me that experience,
I don't want that. No. Gato Roboto's not going to do it, folks. BattleTech really was kind of a strategic RPG, but it really isn't the same thing. You're right. I cannot give you an example. I do not know of one. Someone might be able to tell me, but I don't know of that. Okay, so pirates and mechs. We need those things.
I have a particular set of needs when it comes to mech games, so just don't recommend Hawken to me or something like that.
No. Here's the thing, though. Don't recommend Hawken to anyone. For any reason whatsoever. I'm just saying. I played that during my free-to-play marathon, and it was one of the worst ones I played. It was so frustrating. I have a video that was the attempting to play video where you just listen to me slowly descend into a crying hysteria as I lose all will to live playing that game. It's me constantly just upset that doing anything in the game results in my mech overheating and that I can't seem to get anywhere.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
You remember that experience?
Yeah.
Of me just screaming, why am I overheating again? Because I didn't do anything. I didn't. You audience reviews are wrong. Great action and combat. No. They no, the maps are not fun. Who paid you? Who paid you? This is on the level of Titan. No, it is not. You liar. You Titanfall 2 makes this look like absolute junk. I played the multiplayer in Titanfall 2. That was actually fun, and I don't even like multiplayer games. Oh, Titanfall 2 really did do a great job when it came to the multiplayer aspect. I mean, that is so silky smooth. You get into these great big combat arenas. You're jumping in and out of the mech and wall running across places and shooting people in the mechs and calling down your mech when you get enough energy to do so. And then you just start smashing everything. Oh, so, so satisfying. Not Hawken. Anyway. From PC Gamer, that fans have gotten Hawken on PC working again in single player. Boy, it's good that to know. I just love the fact that, hey, you know this free-to-play game that we were hoping to get, you know, a lot of microtransactions on? We had to have the fans fix it for us so it was workable. It's like, yeah, that's terrific. Okay, so a mech game that isn't Hawken and a pirate game that is not Atlas. So there you go, folks. This should not be as difficult as we're making it out to sound. It should be pretty simple.
And I want to say, if you like Hawken, though we may disagree, please go have fun with it. All on you. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I'm not going to judge you for it, but
yeah. Well. DC isn't going to judge you for it.
Exactly.
DC's not going to judge you. If you tell me that you enjoy playing Hawken, I'll ask you, why aren't you just playing Titanfall 2? Don't you think you'd have a better time doing that? I will not berate you if you really enjoy Hawken, but I will suggest, hey, have you considered not playing Hawken and instead play a completely other game that is so much better made by a really great studio? You should really try it. You might be very happy with what it does. But no, sort of in the same vein as well, actually, that's not a fair comparison, but you know how they always said that, like, Warframe is sort of like the free version of Destiny? And it's it's like, well, that is true, but there is a difference, because Warframe actually was, like, a good game that actually did some stuff that even Destiny wasn't really doing. Like they had actually tried to make like a really good game, and they made it a free-to-play game. and so there's that. So it's not quite the same comparison, but yeah, you can kind of think of it in that way. Hawken is like the free-to-play version of a Titanfall, but they didn't try. Anyway, I'm not judging. But also, it should be worth noting that in 2018, it was actually removed from Steam and all DLC associated with it. And it does indeed continue to exist on consoles, being developed by Hawken Entertainment and published by 505. But it is sort of not around anymore. That's why they were trying to get it back up on PC. last year, and it's a cult free-to-play mech shooter. Oh, great. Oh, God, they were calling it The Hawakening.
Wow.
The Hawakening, folks. Of all the things to bring back.
That's a terrible name.
That is terrible. That is awful, folks. Oh, my God. Of all the things you could resurrect, I can think of plenty of great games that are worth resurrecting. Hawken? Really? There's a lot. Really? People. Come on. There's some really great ones. That always upset me are the ones that are on consoles, that were on consoles or systems that are no longer available. And so you can't play anything you can't play them anymore. Those are the ones that always upset me. So like one of the great ones from the the N64 era was Donkey Kong 64. It was a great game, but it never got moved over to any other systems because I think the licensing part of it, Rare was the developer on that, and they were hitting their strides so well during N64 era, and when they did like Rare Replay, they had 30 of their titles that they were able to put on there, and a lot of great ones that were probably licensing things from when they were with Nintendo. So like you didn't have GoldenEye, and you didn't have Donkey Kong 64, and so it's never come over to like new consoles since then. And so those are the ones that I'm always sad about, that it feels like they just kind of went away and we might not see them again. Although it might be on Switch Virtual Console, I'm not sure. But I think that they were having a few licensing problems. Rare and Nintendo are still kind of working a little bit together, but they're not owned by them anymore. So that relationship becomes a little strained. But they were able to get like Banjo-Kazooie into Smash Brothers. Rare was able to say, yeah, sure, you can use Banjo-Kazooie for Smash Brothers and bring them back in. But they're not technically owned by Nintendo or a third-party developer for Nintendo anymore. so it's games like that that always get me because it feels like I might not be able to play them again. Hawken, I'm cool with that. It's fine if it's gone. It's fine if it's gone. There are a few. If we could retroactively get rid of For Honor, by the way, that would also be really. Could take that. Oh, people are gonna hate me for that one. that seems like a really good play. I'm sorry, For Honor was not good, folks. I'm sorry. That was not Ubisoft's best effort. Anyway, you know what? I'm probably going to get myself in trouble talking about video games at this point. It's at this late hour, so I think it's probably a good time to end. Well, once I start getting on to games that shouldn't have happened, it's probably a good example. I'm going to just sit here and finish my woodchuck quietly in the corner. DC, before we leave, what are you currently playing?
Currently, I am on Baldur's Gate 3 because they released the Druid patch, so I'm playing through as a Druid.
Ah, excellent. I saw that.
That's been fun.
Yes, I saw that, and I thought to myself, yes, Druid! I'm so happy about that, yeah.
I ran in a place where it was like, the crevice is too small to get through. Well, I can just be a cat, and I'm a cat, and it let me right in.
Perfect!
It's like, awesome.
Opening up new ways to play all the time. Excellent. Yeah. Terrific. Yeah, I was looking forward to a Druid. If we were looking at like a 5e, are there what classes have actually been represented in Baldur's Gate 3? What are they missing?
Oh, they're missing a lot. They have a warlock, which was an interesting first class to bring in, I think.
To start, yeah.
Because that was fun, yeah. But you have one of the big things they're missing is a paladin. I think people like to play a paladin.
Yeah. Monk?
No monks yet.
No. They probably have the rogues though.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Ranger? I would kind of think ranger and cleric might be starting ones.
They have.
Maybe I could.
Yes, ranger. Yep, ranger, rogue, warlock, wizard, cleric, fighter, and now a druid.
Okay.
So they're missing sorcerer, bard, barbarian, monk, paladin. Those are kind of your classic. I'd be curious if they added an artificer, as that is the newest full class that.
Sure. Yeah.
That wizards has introduced, because up to that point, it had just all been various subclasses.
Right.
Or things that are interesting, but Artificer was the first official class.
Yeah.
In quite a long time. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I will be interested to see what they end up doing. Yeah, in early access, at least it looks that way. But I do not see anything that lists the Artificer. I'm wondering if
kind of a pipe dream of mine. It may not happen because of when development cycles happen.
Exactly.
So, you know.
Yeah, that's what I figured, is that by the time Wizards had actually released that, I'm pretty sure Larian Studios was so far into development. But who knows? By the time they are absolutely able to release the game in full with all of the classes, they might be able to do it as an add-on of some kind.
And you know, being a video game, they can only give you a couple of choices of subclasses to be. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it comes unwieldy. You know, okay, here's all these great subclasses you can play in. D&D 5th edition when you're sitting around the table, but in a computer game, they either don't work or it's just too much.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's unnecessary at some point. It just takes way too much effort from...
Yeah.
And takes away from the overall game.
Yeah. I'm trying to see what they have for the different domains. It looks like there's several that they were going to be adding to a few of these...
Mm-hmm.
Like the wizard, it looks like they have a couple schools right now, but it almost looks like they're trying to get a bunch of the other schools in. Yep. At some point, it'd be interesting when they do School of Necromancy. That's what I'd play. I always thought it'd be fun to be a necromancer. I thought it'd be fun to play a necromancer that. It, like, goes off on just kind of wild,
mm-hmm.
that overestimate their ability to the nth degree. the kind of necromancer that's like, well, I will just raise up an entire army and destroy your kingdom. Oh, I can't do that? Well, yeah, I'm gonna try. Why can't I? And then they like get like two skeletons up there and kind of go, yeah, see, pretty sweet, huh? This is pretty great. I could take over the entire world. And then they keep getting thwarted at every possible turn. I thought that would be fun. The ones that aspire to be evil geniuses but are never able to truly do it. Like they're just not built for it, but they really just want it. From a very early age, they were told that they will be an evil genius, but they're just not succeeding at it. That I thought would be a fun idea. But it would be interesting to see how they implement it into the game. Mm. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, yes, as it looks at my frame rate keeps dropping, that's never a good sign. And since Alex has apparently lost his internet entirely, I think that's probably a good time to... quit. But hey, you know what? On this episode, we learned a lot of things. We learned that we need more mech RPGs. We learned that we need an actual decent pirate game at some point. That would be great. And we learned that goats should not lick anything, especially a roller coaster. But it is hilarious to watch. So, you know, silver lining. I want to thank Alex, and I want to thank DC for coming in and joining us. Thank you very much.
And, glad to be here.
Yes, always glad to have you here. Thanks to Salt for popping by, and thanks to James, who couldn't be here, unfortunately. To all of our friends who couldn't have joined us, oh well, sorry. Sorry that you couldn't join us. But we will see you on the next episode. Thank you for joining us on Delve Live. Goodbye, everybody.